Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy, and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week on Viewpoints, the tables will be turned. For our mid-year review, we'll hear Lynn Leith from the DAISY Consortium interviewing us.
Topics will include our careers, our family life, some hobbies, and some adventures we've had living with a visual impairment. Pete's, not mine. We'll also discuss the Viewpoints web presence. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip is, there's lots of good advice available. Here are some tips that we've accumulated on this show in the last 6 months.
I feel it's important to have a little bit of rebelliousness in your spirit and say, no, of course I'm going to do this. And of course, it's going to be, you know, I might have to work harder, but I'm going to do it.
I was very fortunate to have parents that were just great about blindness. They never told me, you can't do stuff. You need to be realistic. You need to lower your settings. They just always gave me the clear impression that they expected me to succeed. And it was my job to figure out how.
People need to know that as they get older, they don't have to give up their hobbies. And knitting and crocheting and spinning are hobbies they do not need to give up.
My dream is that we are going to change the face of visual impairment and make it, it's not like, oh, do you run? It's like, which race have you done? Or how far have you climbed? And what kind of bike do you have?
I think for a blind person, especially, anything you can do to organize yourself makes your life easier.
My mother, she had this old saying, was if something came up that I said I couldn't do, I said I can't do that, she'd say, can't, never did nothing.
Just go for it. If you want to do anything as a blind person, I mean, you know, you don't know until you try.
Well, if you've been a regular listener to Viewpoints since January of this year, you might recognize some of those voices that you heard in previous shows.
And in case you didn't recognize those people, we started with Sean Kane from show 1204, who was talking about some research he's doing on enabling the blind to use touchscreens, followed by Jim Snowbarger from show 1216 about the hotspot clicker utility that he developed, then Anna, otherwise known as Access Anna, from show 1214 about knitting for the visually impaired, and she'll be back next week talking about Android accessibility. Then Lauren Lieberman from show 1217 talking about sports camps for visually impaired youth. Lori Motis from show 1207, she's the author and maintainer and distributor of the Blind Post website, kind of like Craigslist for the visually impaired. Then Dave Engebretson from show 1218, where he talked about birding by ear. And lastly, Crystal, also from show 1214, about knitting and yarn crafts for the visually impaired.
And if you've missed some of those shows, or you'd like to hear some of these people again and more of what they had to say, we'll, as usual, have links to these shows in the show notes that are associated with each show on our webpage.
Or you can just go to our website and the page where we have all of the previous shows available, and you can listen to any of the previous shows to your heart's content. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll talk a little bit about how this show came to pass. As we mentioned, Lynn Leith of the DAISY Consortium did an interview of us, which was a little bit different because usually we're interviewing other people, but she wanted to do that so that she could feature us in the My Story segment of the DAISY Consortium newsletter that she's the editor of. And we thought, well, what better way to do it than with an audio interview? We'll be doing another show in late August where we interviewed her, and we'll be talking about the DAISY Consortium.
The DAISY Consortium basically is an organization that puts together standards and rules for how to put together the DAISY books that many of us enjoy on our portable and other type of readers. And so they talk about, you know, how to make other publishers aware of the standards, how to spread the standards, make sure everyone knows what the rules are, and there are some standards. And this is why we're able to use these great DAISY books to be able to navigate by heading, by sentence, etc. And these have been a great boon for the blind community, I think.
Let's meet Lynn.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lynn Leith, and I'm with the DAISY Consortium. And today, for a bit of a change, I'm going to interview Peter and Nancy. And their story will be published in our newsletter, The DAISY Planet.
We talked with Lynn for quite a long time, and she asked us questions, and we figured as long as we had her on the phone, we'd ask her questions, and once we get that show together, that's what you'll be hearing sometime in August. And you'll hear a little bit more about the DAISY Consortium and how they try to make books easier to read for the visually impaired and hopefully for sighted people in the future, too.
And here's how you can get to the DAISY Planet, which turns out is not just a newsletter. There's lots and lots of information of interest to people with visual impairments and links to sources of information.
Can you give us a link for that?
DAISY stories are all published on our website. You can link to the current story from the homepage. And our website is www.daisy.org. And it's important to get the .org right because .com is the DAISY Gun Company.
Well, now you understand where to go if you want to know more about the DAISY Gun Company also.
You are listening to Viewpoint.
At the risk of being a little bit narcissistic, this week's focus topic is the two of us. As we mentioned, Lynn Leith wanted to do this interview of us to appear as a My Story in the DAISY Planet, and we thought maybe some of you would be interested in getting to know a little bit more about the hosts of this show, so we included all of this talking about the two of us in the show. We covered many aspects of our lives, starting with our careers. Pete's major assignment was a little bit surprising for a blind person.
Peter, the project you were involved in, you developed computer models of inkjet printers, as you mentioned, managed a team of image processing scientists responsible for optimizing print quality, and worked on design concepts for new products. The thing here that really took me aback was the fact that you were focused on optimizing print quality, and you led a team with that focus, but you couldn't see the print yourself. Was that an advantage or a disadvantage?
Well, you know, in a funny kind of way, I look upon it as an advantage. It turned out I started out as mostly a computer model, looking at physical processes, you know, electrical signals, heat transfer, fluid mechanics. And it just so happened that someone needed some help one day designing a new image processing algorithm, a new halftoning scheme. And so I said, well, you know, I could do that. And what happened really with these things was I would discuss the concepts with people, and then I'd implement them in software. We'd test them out on one of our prototype printers, and then people had a look at it. Well, of course, I couldn't, so I'd have to go around to various people and get their opinions. And when it comes to looking at a print, everyone sees something a little bit different. So some person would say, I don't like this aspect, or some person would say it's unclear over here. And then I would have to think about that and sort of integrate their thoughts and their perceptions. And so what was interesting to me was that generally people would work on these algorithms themselves and they would provide their own feedback, but they never got sort of a perspective of what did other people think. So in some sense, I think it worked to my advantage that I was forced to talk to a number of people. And in particular, Nancy herself is very fussy about these things. She could be very critical of prints. So she was very helpful in that regard.
So instead of having your own opinion formed when looking at it, you were able to gather the opinions of others and come to a conclusion based on multiple views rather than a single view.
Right, and not be skewed by my own personal opinion, which isn't very objective. So that's how I started out. And then when I became a manager of the group that was developing the image processing algorithms and color correction tables that went into our products later on, then the people who work for me had to learn to communicate with me about the print quality and what they saw. And I think this helped there also, because sometimes just being forced to verbalize what you see and what you're perceiving can really crispen the ideas in your own mind.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And it led to very good and interesting group communications. So I think it sharpened everybody's perceptions and communication skills, and it really worked very well.
You probably brought something to Xerox that not many people could have brought to the company. I think that's very cool.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun at Xerox, and it was really kind of almost humorous having a person who was blind and couldn't barely tell whether the lights were on in a room being the manager of one of the groups that was responsible for developing a lot of the algorithms that went into our printer drivers for our inkjet printers.
Yeah, actually, somebody in the PR department at Xerox figured out this was a little bit unusual, and maybe 10, 12 years ago, they started this big publicity campaign because they figured they could get Pete into the news, and that would get Xerox into the news, and he was on CNN, FN, and Time Digital Special Edition, and of course, the local papers and the local radio, and Paul Harvey.
Well, that was the funny one, the Paul Harvey one. I remember I didn't know that was going to happen. All these people started swarming into my office. Did you hear about, they mentioned you on Paul Harvey. What was that all about? When I finally heard the show, he made it sound like I had invented color printing, like the Gutenberg of color printing. So don't believe everything you hear.
But a lot of the articles said some very nice things about Pete, and you can believe those. But if you find the Time Digital article where they talk about him wearing a rumpled cardigan, don't believe that either. He was dressed very well that day.
Yeah, and to Xerox's credit, they allowed me to be in this position and had enough confidence in me to lead this team. And it worked very well. We had a great team.
Well, then we turned to my career.
Nancy, you were a principal scientist developing computer models of, is it Xerographic printers? Am I saying that correctly? Xerographic?
That's what we call them at Xerox, but everybody else in the world calls them electrophotographic printers.
Okay. And you were exploring the limits of human visual perception and how it relates to print quality requirements. Now, was human visual perception something that you were interested in as a result of having a partner with a visual disability, or was it something you were interested in prior to having met Peter?
Well, so this goes back a little bit to how we met. I had been at Xerox for a week when we met, and so everything I did there was after meeting Pete. Well, and my PhD was on something totally different. It was on electronic properties of amorphous semiconductors. So yeah, I got interested in it after meeting Pete. It really had nothing to do with being so close to Pete. I did learn a lot about what made things easier to see and more clear to people with normal vision by my understanding of what Pete was able to see. Now, when we met, Pete had pretty miserable vision. He was already navigating with a cane, but he was able to do his work with a closed-circuit TV system. And so I learned a lot about what was important about contrast and lighting and all sorts of other things because I had developed an understanding of what Pete was able to see more or less easily.
That's really, really, really interesting because most sighted people don't think about things like contrast or font type or things like that. So unless you've been in the, let's say, the blindness field over the years, and you've worked with people who have vision problems, people just don't get it. It's certainly something that I'm aware of.
We had a lot of fun at work, and it was a great intellectual challenge, and we think we made some good contributions, but, you know, life isn't all about work. And so Lynn asked us some questions about our personal lives and our family, and that was also a lot of fun and also very rewarding.
Back to your early years together, did you do traveling together? And you have children. How many children do you have? And boys, girls?
We've got two kids, and they're both in their mid-20s, a daughter and a son. And boy, we have had no shortage of adventures with the two of them. And now that they're out of the house, often these days without them, although sometimes they join us in our travels. And we've been up and down mountains with them and to various cities, and we've had all sorts of fun adventures as a family.
We're very active with the kids, I would say. In fact, we used to have two tandem bikes. We used to go tandeming with the kids. And we're fortunate enough to be retired now, and we have lots of time to travel around the country visiting our kids. So we told them, you know, we don't mind if you leave town, just live in fun places to visit. Well, so some of you might wonder what it's like being a blind parent. And Lynn was curious also.
Peter, what impact, if any, do you think having a father who is blind had on your kids? And were there challenges you faced as a parent because of your visual disability? Or do you think we all face the same challenges?
You know, we asked the kids that question for a Viewpoint show about a year ago. And they sat there quiet for like 5 minutes and couldn't think of anything. They said, no, you were just our dad. We did things normally. You know, I think, in fact, we modified things a little bit. So, you know, my son wanted to play football, and, you know, it wasn't going to be a traditional game of football. He'd have to yell, one, two, so I could hear something. Or if I wanted to jog with my daughter, you know, I'd put my hand on her shoulder. So we'd modify things appropriately.
So you just adapted things to make them possible.
Yeah, I think it wasn't a big issue. I mean, the bike riding, you know, Nancy and I were always on a tandem, and the kids either took a tandem or their single bikes. Hiking, you know, again, I would just take a Lecky with me and follow someone's shoulder. You know, very often the kids, I mean, they were very good at leading me. You know, they accommodated very well to that.
Are either one of your children in a science field or...
Great question. When they started college, they each assumed that they would go into some sort of science because whatever, they just assumed that, and no.
After having some intern jobs, working with scientists and being with them, you know, like 8 hours a day, I don't want to work with people like this.
There you go, eh? Doesn't matter where you come from. You make your own choices.
That's right.
That's right. You have to find your own happiness.
Yeah.
Peter was a wonderful father. He still is. And there was pretty much nothing that he didn't do unless he thought it wasn't safe. And so he didn't give either kid a bath until the kid was able to reliably sit up. And of course, he'd always keep one hand on the kid and make sure the kid was sitting up. But he did everything. I mean, we meet people who say, oh, I wouldn't change a diaper. I'm like, well, my husband did and he can't see. Think about that. The only thing really that was significantly different in our house is that Pete doesn't drive and he doesn't work power tools. And so he can't go off to the grocery store while I'm doing the fix-it projects or vice versa. And so, you know, things happen in sequence instead of in parallel sometimes. But he was a fully involved dad, and the kids love him dearly, and he loves them. And having a visual impairment didn't make any difference there.
I do remember some of the times when I was feeding them, when they were in high chairs, and I'd put one hand out to know where their face was or where their mouth was, and with the other hand come up with a spoonful of peas or something like that. And, you know, they'd be rooting around with their faces trying to find the spoon. Boy, by the end of the meal, sometimes their faces were all green, but we had a good time, and, you know, I didn't poke any eyes out on them.
And they were pretty easy to clean up.
Well, the other funny ones were playing chase with the kids around the house. So when they were young, I'd be running after them. Of course, they'd be screaming and giggling. And of course, that made it easy to hide. As they got older, they realized that the way to hide from Daddy was to be quiet. So then I'd run around the house and they'd be quiet. And I'd have to tell jokes to make them snicker.
So we didn't let Pete's blindness get in the way of pretty much anything. But, you know, on an ongoing basis, at least one of us was always thinking about, well, how are we going to make this work if Pete couldn't see? And it required a little bit of creativity.
You know, the interesting thing is, I think that sometimes Nancy is more insightful and creative about being blind than I am. I mean, I tend to just do things. If they work out, they work out. If they don't, they don't. And sometimes she'll say, look, you can do that. Why don't you do it this way? Or, you know, here's another interesting idea. And she can be a real motivator sometimes and just very creative about, you know, what kind of modifications might be needed to do something.
Well, and I thank you very much. She's been a very supportive wife through the years, and we've had a lot of fun together.
It's been great. We talk a lot about working at Xerox. That was a big part of our lives. But after long and rewarding careers there, and with the kids moving out of the house, we've transitioned into retirement.
You're both retired, and I was wondering how long you'd been retired and what had made the two of you decide to take the leap or the plunge into retirement.
We retired towards the end of 2005, so it's been a little over 6 years, and it really hadn't crossed our minds yet. We were having fun careers. We weren't really quite retirement age yet. But then Xerox offered one of those magic packages, and it turned out we qualified because they were making it really easy to get rid of the older workers. And, you know, once we established this elaborate spreadsheet and figured out that we could afford it, well, then we had to address all of the really important and difficult questions like, do we want to? What would we do if we weren't working? I mean, we'd been working for a long time, and the prospect of not working was something we hadn't really started thinking about.
Yeah, it is. Some people adapt to it and adopt it very, very well. Other people don't know what to do with themselves. Obviously, you two have made it work really, really well. And I think that's good for everybody, actually. Certainly for your Viewpoints listeners, I would say it was a very good thing.
We really had great careers at Xerox. They treated us well. We worked with fun people, great projects. They were very supportive in terms of me being blind. You know, any adaptive equipment I needed, any assistance was readily available. And I always, you know, I wish more people could find jobs that they really thought were fun. And then it's almost not like work.
But as fun as it was, I mean, we're having a lot of fun being retired also. There are many things to do out there, including our radio show, but we also get together with many of our retired colleagues, and we'll go hiking once a week in different places throughout the area. We get together for book club meetings and breakfasts and meetings at the local university, physics lab, and it's a lot of fun. We do a lot more traveling than we used to. So life doesn't end just because your career may end.
And we're involved in a number of volunteer activities, starting with Viewpoints, which, in case you haven't been able to gather, has pretty much taken over our lives. But we still go into the public school and teach science lessons in the fourth grade. They keep leaving us back. We've been in fourth grade for over 15 years.
Well, they are fun at that age. That is very rewarding.
I'm very active with our local land trust, the Genesee Land Trust, working to preserve open spaces. Pete does a lot of beta testing, especially of adaptive software and hardware products. And then there's music.
Peter, in addition to career and family life, you're also a musician. Your jazz combo, the Peter Torpe Trio, performs locally. Have you been involved in music since you were really young?
I actually, when I went to a school for the blind, in second grade, I had a blind piano teacher. That's when I started learning music.
Do you play by ear, or do you also read music?
No, I do not read music. I play primarily by ear. A lot of the jazz music, if you know the chords and the melody you hear in your head, and you can learn that easily, and you know if they outline the chords for you, and then you can put your own embellishments and your own arrangement.
But you know, Pete gave the really simple answer, no, he doesn't read music. Well, yeah, right. At this point, he can't even see the sheet music, never mind read what's on the page. But when he was a kid, he was able to actually read the sheet music from close up in normal print.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Right? When he got to graduate school and early on at Xerox, he could read it with his closed circuit TV camera. Then he evolved to where he would hand me the book that had the melody and all the chords written out, and I would plunk out the melody on the piano and read the chords, and he would record it all in some sort of audio recording device, and that, whatever the device was, evolved over the years. And now he's got Band in a Box, which gives him the melody and the chords in a computer accessible format. So he's been getting the music in somehow, starting from the very conventional, although he had to hold it kind of close, to something that's hardly conventional at all.
And with the jazz, you know, I find it a lot more flexible because it's not all written down, so I can mostly put together my own arrangements. The classical, I found very frustrating because I used to have to look at the music so closely. I could only read a measure at a time. And by the time I'd memorize a classical piece, I was sick of it.
Jazz lends itself to the musician doing his or her own thing. I mean, that's kind of what jazz is all about, so it's a nice fit.
And I've actually had a fair amount of formal musical training over the years, so it makes it a little bit easier to continue in that vein. I actually thought at one time, instead of getting a PhD in physics, I almost considered going to music school.
Well, we really enjoyed doing this interview with Lynn Leith, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to it.
Thank you both, Peter and Nancy, Nancy and Peter. It has been an absolute joy meeting you and talking with you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Glenn.
This has been fun.
Yeah, it's certainly been different. We're usually on the other side. Now for this week's high-tech item, we'll be discussing our web presence, and our homepage is at www.viewpointsplus.net.
viewpointsplus.net.
And from there, you can get to pretty much anywhere else we are on the web, or you can start in Facebook, look for Viewpoints Plus, or Twitter, we're at Viewpoints Plus.
And then we also set up a Google Groups for Viewpoints listeners. And that's been a lot of fun. We try to keep that being a low traffic list, mostly with announcements about upcoming shows. But we've invited many of the people whom we've interviewed on the show to join the list. And a lot of listeners join also. And so it's opened up some nice dialogues between the experts and other people that we've interviewed and some of the rest of the people being connected around the world.
If you'd like to join the Google group for Viewpoints Plus, you send an email to this address, Viewpoints Plus, then the symbol plus, not the ampersand over the 7, but the plus sign over the equals, subscribe at googlegroups.com. So I'm going to repeat that. Viewpoints Plus, plus sign, subscribe at googlegroups.com. And since that was nearly impossible to read in any way that you could possibly understand what we meant, you can go to the show notes for this show, and we will have that as a link on the show notes.
And if you click on the link, it will open up a mail note, and just hit send, and you'll be subscribed to the group. Also on our website, you'll see links to our podcast if you want to receive Viewpoints on a regular basis. We also have links to all of the archive shows since the beginning of 2011 that we've been doing, as well as links to show notes associated with each show that usually have contact information, links, phone numbers, and where you can find out more information about things we've discussed, and much more.
We have some news items, and of course we only have one of those up at a time under What's New, but any of the old ones are still available. We've collected those into a blog, but we're trying not to make it too wordy, so we don't put up new news items that often.
And we also like to hear from listeners. So if you have some suggestions or comments on things you've heard, you can send us directly a note by sending a message to contact@viewpointsplus.net, and that will get to us, and we'll try to respond as quickly as we can.
That's it for show number 1226. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking with Access Anna about Android smartphone accessibility. This will be part one of a two-part mini-series, with the second part the following week containing demonstrations Anna did using her brand new Android smartphone running Ice Cream Sandwich. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.